Former editorial director of Martha Stewart, Margaret Roach, has been harvesting 30 years of backyard parables, deceptively simple, instructive stories from a life spent digging ever deeper, and has distilled them in a memoir along with her best tips for garden making, discouraging all manner of animal and insect opponents at home pickling, and much more in the book. It is The Backyard Parables, and she uses her understanding of the natural world, philosophy, and life to explore the ways that gardening saved and instructed her, and meditates on the science and spirituality of nature. Again, it's The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Margaret Roach back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
My reindeer brought me here.
We were joking earlier because you were on for your last book, and you were supposed to come into the studio, and then we had a similar storm.
Right.
And that kept you home.
I was iced in that time.
Yeah,
there was nothing
iced.
I could do about it. Even the reindeer couldn't help me that day.
So you were bound and determined to get in today, and
yes,
I thank you.
Exactly. Well, it's good to be here.
Very, very much for doing this. You wrote a beautiful book. I guess it was 2 years ago.
It was 2 years ago.
And I shall have some peace there. And how did this book come out of that experience?
In a way, I feel like this is the sequel. The Backyard Parables is the sequel to "And I Shall Have Some Peace There." "And I Shall Have Some Peace There" was when I exited the city and my so-called successful long career in publishing as an executive and moved to my rural, which had been my weekend rural home of 20 years, and became a full-time rural resident. And so it was like, "And I Shall Have Some Peace There." It was that first year of semi-shock and semi-exhilaration, you know, of that big life change, and reconnecting to nature 7 days a week. And I feel like this is now that the garden and I have been together all but one night in 5 years. Actually, the only time I've stayed away is one night I've slept away from home. So I've been literally there for 5 years now. I feel like this book is about that more intimate and mature part of our relationship, you know, the day-to-day, and we've gotten used to each other.
Why is that proximity so important to you?
Well, gardens are interesting. You know, as I said, I had this garden. It's in the Hudson Valley in Columbia County, New York, and I had it for 20 years, and I would zoom up there on Friday nights, you know, and get there in the dark. You know, we gardeners tease about needing a miner's helmet with the,
right,
to see our gardens, you know, when we arrive from the weekend, from the weekday job. And I'd have like 36 or 48 hours together. But for all those 20 years, so many things I missed. Just like if you were a working parent and you might miss baby's first step, right? Because they did it on a Tuesday at 2 p.m. The garden has all these subtle things that it does. It's not just like, oh, this perfect moment, here's the hydrangeas are in bloom today. You know, there's a lot of other interesting things, you know, insects and caterpillars and all kinds of like subtle, you know, bark and buds and raindrops being held on things. You know, and if you're not there all the time, you don't have time. And when you are there, you're rushing around because you're the weekender who has to get everything done right away.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's that, again, it allows intimacy, time together. Allows intimacy. It allows me to slow down and get to know it in a way that I couldn't when I was that crazy weekend person.
Well, it I find it fascinating that in that 5 years you've only missed one day. That, I mean, that would seem to me to indicate an almost obsessive quality of not getting too far away.
Indeed. And, you know, I think what happened to me, I worked in corporate America, whatever, you know, my corporate publishing career for a little over 30 years, always in an urban environment. And yet I was always a gardener or a person who dreamed that she wanted to be like a back to the land kind of hippie chick. But there I was in like a 35 story building in Manhattan, you know, every day. So I think what happened is and the other thing that happened is the more successful I became those years, the less I wrote. Not only the less I gardened, but the less I wrote. Because, you know, I was the manager, I was in the meetings and things like that. So here I am, I finally get here, and I feel like I had 30 years of stored up, you know, hunger for it. So I don't ever want to leave again. Like, I just want to close the gate and stay home forever and just look out the window and piddle around outside. You know what I mean? I think it was stored up. And similarly, every day I get up and writing just pours out, you know, because this is the second 80-something thousand word book in 2 years. And I feel like I'm just getting started. Oh, my poor editor.
which must be a wonderful feeling to realize
that
you have that.
It is, to get the pent up.
Yeah, to know that you have that inside of you
and it's
waiting to come out.
Yes.
So you look like a day like today and the snow is covering the ground and the garden is at rest, I would assume. Mm-hmm. So doesn't that free you up to leave it?
But why would I want to? Because it and I mean, you know, there's this, there's the two words, garden and gardener. And, you know, we could think of them as two separate organisms, but I don't really think of it that way. I am, the garden and I are kind of this one organism that kind of grows to, we've grown together. And it really is like a long marriage. oddly enough, it is my significant other. And it really informs so much of what I do, not just when I'm actively planting or mowing or digging or raking or harvesting, but it informs what I see going on outside, informs sort of ethically, spiritually, philosophically, informs the way that I do everything. It informs the way that I eat. The lessons I've learned from the garden make me not want to eat high on the food chain, but very low on the food chain in respect for nature and the soil, you know, and my appreciation of other aspects of nature, the seeing the cycles, you know, of beginning and then decline and end, repeat themselves outside. I mean, there's so many life lessons out there. So I'm happy, even in the most frozen garden, to be privileged to sort of bear witness to the subtleties of nature and its cyclical examples. So maybe that sounds crazy. And you're right, it's a little OCD.
What I'm thinking of, the first thing I thought of was whatever happened that one day that you left, they must feel very proud that was the thing that made you go. Unless it was a tragic thing.
Oh, you mean why I left the city?
Yeah.
Oh, actually.
Not leaving the city. You said there was only one day that you.
Oh, that I left the garden. I thought you meant, yeah. Oh, it was, yes, it was to Baltimore to give a lecture to the Maryland Horticultural Society, which is a group I always wanted to go speak to. I've spoken in more than 20 years of lecturing a couple dozen times a year about gardening. I've spoken to most of the groups around the country that I was curious about at one time or another, but this was one. They have about 250 plus people will come, and it's in a beautiful spot. It's a really keen gardening area, that area around Baltimore.
It's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it is. And I just thought, and the woman who approached me, you know, she sucker punched me into it. She just showed me pretty pictures of the area, and, you know, so I took the train down and I did. But it was hard. It was really hard for me. I mean, that sounds crazy, but it was really hard.
When the garden is, I want to look at the at where the garden begins and you begin and end.
Uh-oh, that fuzzy place where I can't tell the one or the other.
I mean, in the sense of if you have a quote-unquote good year.
Yes.
Is that to say that the garden was successful that year?
No, that's a very good point. I think of the harvest of the garden. You know, the book has got the word parables in the title, you know, and parables are metaphors, two layers of lesson,
right?
The obvious and the not so obvious, right? And that was obviously intentional. So I think of the garden that way too. And there's always these two layers of harvest for me. There's the harvest of like the ripe tomato or the bouquet of flowers that I can put on the dining table or whatever. That's obvious. But then there's the harvest of the other stuff and some the life lessons, and some of that other stuff is the most bountiful in the absolute worst times. So Hurricane Irene, or 18 inches of snow in October of 2011, which took down for me 23 mature shrubs and 3 trees in a garden that, you know, was at this filled in fabulous, you have to wait, you know, a half a lifetime to get there stage, was in many places erased. So that would seem to be a depressing thing. And of course, at the moment that it happened and that I could hear things snapping outside in the darkness, it was a depressing thing. But then there's the one door closes, another opens. There were, once we erased the dead bodies, there were opportunities to explore what would be next. So it was a new beginning for me in the garden too. So this is the thing, is that even the worst times are sometimes extremely fruitful for the gardener in terms of his or her personal growth and the learning that can come and the opportunities. You know, I didn't have any room for any more plants, and guess what? I got to go shopping after that.
And if you have a successful year in the sense of you have a book come out and mm-hmm. it does well and people are interested in it and you are writing some of your best work, you feel, do you feel, is there a sense that that translates into the act of gardening, that your success in that field bleeds into the other, where it gives you confidence when you're gardening?
Yes, I do think so. I think that it is, there is that, as I was saying a little bit, or hinting at a little bit before, it's a little bit of that Jerry Maguire, you know, when he finally later in the movie says to her, "You complete me."
Right.
Like, I feel like garden and gardener, Margaret and the garden, we're like this one thing and we're growing together, as I said before. And so, yes, I do think that's the case. I do think that's the case. The that's just my phone quacking. Don't
that's
worry.
Okay.
I have a 17-year-old niece who thinks it's extremely funny to do things like change auntie's phone ringer to like duck quackers and stuff. Well, this is my life, Joe. Now you know the real Margaret.
By the way, I have to say, it is funny.
It is funny.
It is funny.
And she's done worse things to me. Trust me. It always is about animals and birds and stuff like that.
Margaret Roach is our guest. The book is The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life, and the book is published by Grand Central. And obviously we talk about gardening and we think of the plants, but there's so much about the book and so much about what you write about is just nature in general, being
yes.
outside.
Yes. And it is, and the garden, we have to remember, a garden is just a contrivance that a human being imposes on a little corner of nature, right? It's not nature itself. We're like trying to shape and fashion a little corner of the world ourselves, and we're trying to control it and make it look the way we imagine it should look. So it's not nature as in wild nature. It's a contrivance. So that's, I have to always keep that in mind. You know what I mean? That I'm imposing myself on it. But it is my window. The garden is my window into, you know, I don't have a science PhD or whatever. But it's my window. I see something outside. I see a moth that I've never seen before. And it's fantastically hairy. And I've got to go inside and look up why a moth needs to have hair all over its body. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the garden's my window into science. It's my window into the spirit. It's my window into a lot of life answers or questions, sometimes just questions. So it's my window into a lot of different things.
Do you feel that you are creating a habitat, or do you ever worry that you are destroying one?
Absolutely. I think that that's, and in the years I've been gardening, these 25, 30 years, the issue of our impact on the environment has been, you know, we've become more and more conscious. When I first started gardening, people didn't even say out and worry about invasive plants. People didn't talk about that so much. They were just beginning, other than scientists. Ecologists. Now, even today, I see in some garden centers plants that I know are highly invasive, and I don't understand why they're for sale. Just because they're pretty doesn't mean they should be for sale. So, I mean, we do have to have consciousness. I don't want to be growing anything that's known to be invasive or damaging. I want to never be using chemicals. I mean, that's, at least I feel good about that I'm not using any kinds of chemical additives in the garden of any.
Is that a challenge?
Type. It is a challenge, and I'm angry at the nursery industry for, and I call up and say terrible things to the, the press departments. I call up and I say, I tried to grow this verbena of yours, and you know what? It says it's such and such, and that's a big bunch of baloney. If I can't grow it, how can the regular person grow it who doesn't have as much experience? These plants that we get, like our annuals especially, and a lot of the seeds that we buy for our gardens, if they've been grown in a commercial environment, a greenhouse environment or a commercial farm, they've been grown with tons of water and fertilizers and sometimes other chemicals as well. So they're on what's called very high inputs. They've been given a rich diet and coddled. Then we bring them to our organic gardens, you know, where we maybe take good care of our soil, but we're not giving all those extra beef up kind of synthetic things. And these poor creatures sort of like languish. You know, it was in the greenhouse getting fed once a week with, you know, some blue liquid chemical fertilizer, and you don't give it to it at your house, and the thing sort of like flops over and says, I hate it here, take me back to the greenhouse.
I'm done.
So I'm mad at the garden industry for not being the leaders instead of leading us astray. They should be the leaders and saying, hey, guess what? We've worked on these plants. They can grow without that. You can use fish emulsion on these and they're going to be really happy, which is a lower nitrogen, lower concentrated, natural, you know, liquid fertilizer that you could use, like seaweed emulsion or fish emulsion, but doesn't have the boost. You know, it doesn't have like the steroid feeling effect, you know, to give the same bounce as the synthetics. So
to see something grow, to see life erupt, where does, because there's certainly a high level of creativity in that.
Mm-hmm.
As well. There is an artistic component. Now, obviously, part of the beauty and part of the end experience comes in the life and the mm-hmm. the maturation of the plant. But you play a large role in that.
Right.
And a choreographer, if you will.
Right. And again, and that's why it is a contrivance. And you are the sort of trying to be the maestro. And it's a really interesting, gardening is a really, if you sort of step back from what you're doing, again, it's a real domination sort of thing. You're really trying to impose, okay, now plant, you know, I want you to stand right there and I want you to bloom perfectly and don't drop a petal. You know what I mean? That's what you'd really like, right?
Yeah, well, sure.
And guess what? It's not going to do it no matter what you do. So what it's going to do for you is not just give you that maybe instant of pretty bloom, but then the petals are going to shatter and you're going to get this pink puddle on the ground under the rose bush or the crab apple tree. And you can celebrate that too, because that's that carpe diem reminder, like the Japanese gardeners know so well, of our ephemeral nature, the ephemeral nature of all living things. So it can also give you, again, that second harvest, that life lesson of the fallen petals on the ground. So don't just look for the perfect moment. Celebrate the passings also.
How do you think it changed you?
Oh my goodness, every single possible way. You know, I am a multiple time college dropout, but I'm a person who now reads science books and poetry and all kinds of things that I teach myself. I've become, you know, a voracious studier because the garden has asked me so many questions. Every time I go outside, there's something else I've never seen before, and I have to know why. So it's completely saved me and changed me and educated me and inspired me and given me a spiritual foundation. So other than that, nothing. Other than that, the heck with it.
but you need it, right?
I mean,
yeah.
Again, it's the Jerry Maguire. I'm the Jerry Maguire, you complete me thing with the garden. Definitely. It and I are definitely joined at the hip.
One of the things, I asked this question, going to your analogy of the petals falling and the and accepting that moment as well and enjoying it, you know, my aunt was a gardener and loved it, and as she aged, one of the hardest parts of that aging process was not being able to get out there.
Yes.
Every day. Do you think about that?
I think about it all the time. I have 2.5 acres on a steep hillside. And I'll say that, you know, 25 years ago, it was a lot easier pushing a wheelbarrow of mulch up to the top beds than it is today. It's very important for me to think about making the garden somewhat simpler as I get into my through my 50s and face my 60s, not so far in the future, and making it somewhat smaller. I hope that I will be able to bring enough of it to that point where it will at least look good out the window, even if that's where I am. And of course, the dream of a gardener like myself is that one day I'm just going to fall face down in the compost heap.
So. That's exactly what my answer.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what you want, is you want to be out there doing your thing, even if it's not quite so vigorously as 20 or 30 or 40 years before, and just fall down, I guess.
Because she said, at this age, this is where I really want to enjoy it.
Yes,
absolutely. Where I want to sit and look.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I've sited the garden on axis the best parts are on axis from my favorite chairs in the house.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's.
I'm ready.
Good room with a view. You are going to be pretty much everywhere, I must say.
I'm going everywhere from here.
You have many, many events. Let me just real quick get to three highlights, if you will. One is January 20th, it's Sunday, January 20th, this Sunday, at Oblong Books in Millerton, and you will be reading and signing the book that at 2 o'clock at Oblong Books at our friends in Millerton. Also, skipping ahead just a bit, you are going to be at Northshire Bookstore on Saturday, January 26th, and you will be reading and signing there. And then also, March 3rd in the afternoon, you will be at one of my favorite places, which is Bat and Kill Books in Cambridge, New York, for an afternoon event, 2 o'clock on Sunday, March 3rd. You can find out all the cool events and all of the other places in our region that Margaret is going to be by going to awaytogarden.com. Awaytogarden.com, and there's an events calendar there, and you can check it out. And you're going to be all over the place. So
indeed. But that's
which is
good.
Fun. That's a good, the good part. Excellent. So you can find out more information by going to awaytogarden.com. Again, the name of the book is The Backyard Parables, Lessons on Gardening and Life, published by Grand Central. Margaret Roach, a great pleasure to
thank you.
Have you
thank
on
you.
The
thank
program.
You. Finally.
A delight
to see you here.
Thank you very, very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.